Hey, welcome to the Bear Fruit Show. Super excited to have you guys. We got our guest today, Scarlett, and we're talking about the failure success stories in life, business, and real estate. And our guest today is Scarlett. We're so happy to have you. Thank you for joining us, Scarlett.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. I've been watching the show and I'm happy to be on it.
Yeah, let's go.
Peggy and all the intros. So that's always nice to see her face whenever I can.
Yeah. So the quick background story, I know Scarlett through my wife. You guys went to high school together, played basketball together. We went to your guys' wedding 3-4 years ago. And so it's fun kind of following each other and seeing you do your thing and tear up New York. So
Yes. Megan is one of my besties from high school, and the wedding was almost exactly 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. Bermuda. That was fun. That was a really fun time. So, yeah. So anyways, we have Scarlett on today, and she is kind of giving us kind of her story of ups and downs and just through life. And we're kind of diving in today. Her top accomplishments are annually being recognized as one of the top influencers across banking, fintech. That's kind of her niche, her world. So getting into the C-suite of public company in her 20s, and then having Tech Tuesday be one of the top 15 newsletters across LinkedIn with 174 subscribers. That's crazy. 174,000. That's a big difference. And being the first in her family to go to college, that's awesome. So there's a lot in that. So congratulations off the top, and excited to have you on just to share your wealth of knowledge. So
absolutely. No, thank you. I'm excited to dive in and talk about all of these things, because it's been we're relatively young, but it's been a long journey. And I feel like I've lived the life of a handful of people in the time on earth that I've been here so far. So happy
to talk about it. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's wisdom is wisdom, no matter how old or young you are. So So do me a favor, if you're on right now, give us a like, give us a share, give us a comment. We'd love to do that. And if you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, The Bear Fruit Show. And I had a mentor reach out to me once and just say, hey, Kyle, look for someone with fruit on the tree and learn from them. And so Scarlett's definitely someone I can learn from. And so all our guests are people, we feel like, you know, wisdom is powerful. It's more precious than any money you could ever have. So that's kind of the value here. And so as we kind of dive in, Scarlett, kind of share us a little bit about your story, kind of from A to Z, where you're at right now, the ups and downs, the lows, the highs, all the good stuff.
Sure. So I'll start riffing, Kyle. And if there's anything you want me to elaborate on, feel free to interrupt me. As you know, I've lived in New York 15 years, so I'm fine with that.
Just to go off that, how is that transition? So Durango, Colorado is where you're from.
Yeah.
Small town. And yeah, you moved to the big city, you know, New York, you know, as big as it gets. So entertain me.
So Durango, obviously we'll have plenty of people from Durango, so they'll know, but for the people from the other side, maybe who don't know, 15,000 people, Southwest Colorado. I, from a very young age, have always had a very type A personality, been very ambitious and wanted, you know, bigger and better things. I loved where I grew up, but I was also fascinated by the idea of that city life. My mother was not from this country. She was from Sweden. And so I was fortunate. She was also a flight attendant when I grew up. So I was fortunate to be able to fly and experience the world through that. And of course, my family in Sweden. And so sometimes, because we would have buddy passes, we would stay over in New York. And I fell in love with the city. It was just such a other world, even though we're all in the same country. It was something that was so different than anything that I had seen. And you mentioned, or we talked a bit about both Megan and I playing basketball. I've always been a extremely competitive person throughout my entire life, whether it be academically or athletically, you know, you name it, I'm competitive. So I saw it, I went and started looking further, and New York is the biggest city in the country. So I said, well, I need to compete with the best of the best. So that's where I'm going.
Nice.
When I was in high school, that when we were first putting together resumes and things like that, you still had that thing with the objective. And I put to be CEO of a major corporation in New York City. And I kept that on there for a long time. So the other thing about me that a lot of people, especially now, know me on the professional sense, that don't know about me from when I was younger, is while I had all those things and playing sports in a town like Colorado, like a town like Durango, everyone knows who you are. But I was also very shy and had a hard time standing up for myself. And so I had that bubble of Durango because everyone knew me. So it was very easy. And I remember my mom, like small things that we were at the movie theater, my brother, my mom and I, and my Dippin' Dots were all, they finally got Dippin' Dots at the theater, which was a big deal. And all my Dippin' Dots were all frozen together and I didn't want to go and complain. Like I would have just dealt with it. And I said, I said to my little brother, it's like, hey, Sven, can you go do this? My mom is like, Scarlett, I had already been accepted to school in New York. And she said, how are you going to go live in a city like New York by yourself when you can't do this? And so I think that the New York transition was the first time or probably the most prominent time in my life where I got really clear about being comfortable with being uncomfortable, which that theme has permeated my entire life. And I really attribute that to the success that I've had because it's the most awkward and uncomfortable thing to do, but you know that by doing that, you're going to grow as a person. So that's really what New York was for me. And it was terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, going from a town of 15,000 people to, I have no idea how big New York is. I've been there three times, but it's huge. How many?
8 million.
8 million. Yeah. That's a big difference. So, game changing experience. So keep going.
So going to New York, it's funny too. So I went to a Jesuit university in the Bronx, which was a nice balance because it still felt very communal, but it was very close to the city. So it was kind of that nice stepping stone into the city. But I remember I filled out my, roommate application and I was very, like, I was always into school and sports, right? So I wasn't into partying or anything. And I ended up getting put in the party dorm with a quad and I got there and the girls were just going crazy and partying every night. And the first like week and a half that I was in school, I just called home crying every night being like, what the F did I just do? I can't believe I'm here. I can't, like, I just feel so uncomfortable. This is so out of my zone. I'm also one that like really prioritizes sleep. I love a good 7-8 hours sleep a night and having people come in and out of the room at all times where you can't control that. I'm also a very light sleeper. My husband jokes that if we were in the caveman era that I'd be one at the front of the cave to make sure that everyone knew what was going on because I was up to like the drop of a dime. But
you and Megan both. She's the same way.
It's what it is, you know. Now I luckily can typically go back to sleep. But anyways, back to the college thing. It was hard because I was being woken up all throughout the night. So it took a while to get comfortable with that situation and kind of finding my voice and finding my own. I worked on campus my freshman year. That was part of the kind of package of me going there. And so I got to know people and it was a good experience, but I only stayed on campus for 1 year. By my sophomore year, I had actually moved off campus. So by my sophomore year, I was 19, maybe 19 or 20. I started working full time while going to school full time.
Okay.
So that hustle mentality has been there from a very early age. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Entrepreneurs, business. I mean, you have to, and it's just the mindset that you have, you decide, you know, you gotta be uncomfortable with being uncomfortable and taking those steps and meeting people. And, you know, it's part of the game. So that's, yeah.
And I remember that too. So the first job, I'm not counting the one that I had at the university. So I had been a server. I started working when I was 14 in Durango, right? So Far Course, which doesn't exist anymore. I don't remember what it's called now. We actually, last time I was there, we went there and had dinner, but Kyle, you probably don't remember the name of it off the top of your head. But anyways, no. It was 2 years ago. But so I started working when I was 14 as a busser, then became a hostess, then became a waitress. So anyways, like my first job in New York was a waitress, but it was so crazy because, like, you know, in New York, you can't just have waitress experience. Like they want New York City because it's way different doing something. So that was like a very intimidating process going through that. And my first job that I got was at Ruby Tuesdays in Times Square in New York City. And my husband Troy still makes fun of me for this all the time, but like I really like vividly remember this. So it was in the middle of Times Square, which, you know, for real New Yorkers is like torture because it's tourist central. But for someone who's still fresh and new, even though I've been there for years, like I was in the city, felt like that dream come true. And I remember just going back, like clearing plates off of tables, and they had these like beautiful floor to ceiling, kind of like panoramic views of Times Square, and dropping off dishes and being like, wow, I've made it. Like, I've you know, and Troy always laughs about that with me. But I mean, I really felt that way at that time. I will always, I have goosebumps just saying that because I remember how strong that was. Like, it was so different than Durango. And here I was in the heart of New York City in Times Square. I got a job that, you know, there were so, I just remember going to the interviews. There were so many people. It was a brand new restaurant. Everyone was, you know, I had to do like 5 interviews for a waitressing job. Like, it was not easy. And so that was one of those kind of pivotal first moments for me, is getting that. And then I had many other jobs, became a cocktail waitress at a really trendy lounge, ended up becoming a bottle girl at a nightclub. So, I mean, there's many ways that we can go here. And of course, there was a China piece too. So it's up to you how you want to continue this.
Yeah, no, those sound fun. So, I mean, I think that every job, no matter what you've done, is a stepping stone, or it's a learning opportunity. And you can pull, you know, there's things that you learned, you know, as a waitress from even bottle service that you transitioned into your role now, you know, working with high net worth individuals or, you know, CEOs of companies. And, you know, you probably did some of that when you're bottle service, to be honest. And 100%. So kind of tell me how you decided to turn that into a positive situation and really a stepping stone to kind of where you are now.
Yeah. So same thing. So getting into bottle service is extremely difficult, like extremely, extremely difficult. I kind of lucked out and was able to join a club, right? Like they were at their pinnacle, and then they were kind of a little bit on the, I'm not going to say downward, but they weren't like that, you know, big name.
That one, right? Yeah.
So that allowed me to get in without having experience. It was financially extremely rewarding, especially for being whatever I was, 21 years old. That was 21, maybe 22 by then. It was just awesome because, I mean, I know the highs and lows, right? Like, that's one thing about the service industry, is it's not consistent in terms of income. Like, you'll be rolling it in, and then the next day it'd be a bad night or whatever else. But exactly what you say is true, though. So that whether it was the clientele that I had at Ruby Tuesdays in Times Square, which was an international clientele, of course, because it's Times Square and a tourist, to going in and being a cocktail waitress at a really like trendy lounge, there were a lot of high net worth individuals, a lot of people that would come also. So businessmen all the time during lunch hour would come there. So there was a lot of conversations that were started. And me being the eternal optimist, there was plenty of times where these guys were like, oh, you can come work for us. I'm like, okay, here's gonna be my next job, you know, and never ended up panning out. So that's one of the things I learned a lot, is like, I think this is true anywhere, but definitely in New York, it's like people talk big games and the reality is probably somewhere far, far away from that. But once I got into nightlife and was doing the bottle service, I mean, it was really about, like, there's a sales process to it. There's an emotional intelligence component to it. So what you don't control what happens by the time they get into the club, but once they do, you kind of control the flow of how that goes. And so a lot of my fellow bottle girls were, and you've actually met a bunch of them, Kyle, at the wedding, but models, actresses, whatever else. And so each one kind of played on different things. And so I always tried to connect on like the sports and academic level, right? So we had, not only do we have a lot of athletes that would come in, but even the businessmen, something was going on. So I'd be talking about the Knicks, or I'd be talking about the Giants or whatever. So I could always riff on that level. So I found a way to make sure that I was unique and that they remembered me and that my message resonated. So they want to come back, because there's many clubs you can choose to go to in the city. So why do you want to come back to this one? It's because you had that good experience. Or if there's, you know, a group of guys, I see girls on the dance floor hanging out, it's like, hey, you guys want to, you know, come over here, you know, help to facilitate those conversations. whatever it was just really about being scrappy, going back to the entrepreneurial thing. It's like thinking about things differently, and you know, okay, it's a slow night. Well, what can we do to kind of get momentum. It's just making people look bored. Like, let's get a few people out there. Let's go dance. Let's have fun. It was a crazy world. It was a crazy life, but it was also a lot of fun. And I still have some of my best friends from that time in my life.
Awesome. Awesome. And so it's kind of transitioning into that, you know, you're probably what, 22, 23, mm-hmm. and then kind of where from there, keep going.
Okay. So because the nightlife world allowed me to have a bit of financial flexibility and freedom, I was really able to kind of take my time and figure out what I wanted to do. And that sounds great strategically, but what that was actually like in practice. So I graduated Fordham in the top of my class, like
nice
top 1%, right? I've always, as I said too, always been very competitive and also been always been very academically inclined. And so because of that, I was kind of thinking, well, the world is my oyster. Graduated top of my class, big things are going to happen. But what I didn't realize is, and so you mentioned that in the beginning, I was the first person in my family to go to college, and I didn't have, my parents did everything they could for me, but it wasn't clear to me, and it's not anyone's fault, how important internships were, as an example, because remember, I was working full-time all throughout college. So yeah. I definitely did not have the ability to go do an unpaid internship, as an example. So I started seeing during that time. So I had the nightlife stuff going. And in the meantime, in the day, I was like trying to figure out what my next steps were going to be. And it was a really, really hard time. And I felt like all this confidence I had built, I came to New York. I really, like, I had confidence in high school because of what I was able to achieve both athletically and academically. And then that kind of got taken away when I moved to New York. And then when I got done with college, it was all high again. I had the nightlife and all that. And then now I'm graduated and I can't find a job. All that was taken away again. And so that was one of those examples where it was a reminder of like, it's not always what you know, but it's who you know. And yeah. Because I didn't know a single person when I moved to New York City. I didn't prioritize that. I mean, through nightlife and things like that, I started making some relationships, but that's a little bit of a different world. So I was interviewing and applying for so many different positions because I didn't know what it is that I wanted to do. Secretaries, assistants, you know, you name it. I ended up finding accounting. That was my major. So I was looking at stuff like that too. I ended up finding a role. So there was a data visualization startup called Infamous, and they were looking for an office admin. And so I applied for that, interviewed, really, really like got along with the team very, very well. And, basically the CEO at the time said to me, like, listen, Scarlett, this is what you make of it. Like, you have all the potential, just show me what you can do type thing. So while I was the office admin, I was going downstairs, 37th and Madison. So I'd be going downstairs to the Duane Reade, Walgreens, whatever, you know, we have CVS's, grabbing waters, bringing stuff up, ordering lunch, doing all that. But then because we were a small tech company, I was sitting in on the strategy meetings. So here's this client that we should go after or whatever else. And so it was really cool because it allowed me to get my hands dirty and like get into strategy where I wouldn't, if it was like a big corporate company, I would never get that opportunity. And yeah. The team was extremely experienced. So I think people have a perception when they think of like the startup life, you see, you know, the Social Network and the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world. If the actual, and I want to make sure this is right, but the actual age of an entrepreneur is in their 40s. So of course there's a small, like there's the young people who are doing things too, but there's a lot of very seasoned people who are going and starting their own companies. And so that was something too, mm-hmm. I found people around me with decades of experience that I could learn from, which was awesome. And I learned a ton. And again, so Paolo was the CEO. You also met him. He was at my wedding. He was again pushing me to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and so he would bring me into the meetings with the EVPs at CNN. So our technology was used primarily in events and in media. So The Economist, Entertainment Weekly, USA Today, like all these big publications were clients, and then we had some really cool ones on the event side, but including the Olympics and the Super Bowl. But sweet. Yeah. But with that, he would push me and he'd have me sitting in those meetings with these EVPs and he'd have me, and then we'd be at events, you know, conferences, and he'd have me being the one pitching Infamous. So it really pushed me out of my comfort zone quickly. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say about that.
Yeah. Like an acceleration button, really. You had to, right? You got put into a position and you just got the opportunity and ran with it. And that's something too. I think so many people sit in their situations, and you could have saw your, as like, you could have been very, very boxed in and be like, all right, I'm just grabbing waters. I'm just running errands for these people and no one cares about me, that kind of thing. But what was cool was that you saw, and also, you know, he presented an opportunity, but you took advantage of it too. And that's cool. And you mentioned something too. And I heard this and I love this phrase, but your net worth is your network, right? Yeah. And there's so many, I mean, connecting with people and connections. And you started that learning how to do that when you're doing bottle service and when you're waitressing, yeah, that connection piece. And so obviously you connected with your boss or whoever it was. And so they were like, hey, this girl, you know, has got some talent and see what she can do. And then you killed it. So, that's part of it. So that's cool.
It's a huge part of it. So if I were, and we're kind of jumping ahead here, but if I were to, cause you mentioned that comment, it made me really think, if I were to like sit back and contemplate the things that enabled me to get to where I am, it's twofold. The network piece, like my biggest asset is 100% that, because I busted my behind to make that happen, which is the second part, right? Which is that hustle thing, which is like, listen, there's always going to be someone who's smarter, prettier, da 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 da. In every category, there's someone who's a better than you. And I live that and I breathe that. But there's one thing that I know, that I can work harder, or I will work harder than anyone to get to what it is that I need to do. And that has been my philosophy since I could remember. So I mean, I have been blessed, and I do have a lot of talents, but I also work so friggin' hard to make things happen and take advantage of those opportunities. And that leads into the network thing, which we can definitely talk about, but that was its own really crazy hurdle to get to that network component, which I basically built from scratch.
Yeah. I mean, going from small town girl to New York City and, you know, making things happen. So yeah, that's a special thing. And I think people, if they can, you know, and they could look at the glass half empty or half full. And, you know, when you have that positive mindset and outlook on things, and when you're looking for opportunity and looking to make the best of things and connecting with people and truly caring about people too, you know, that goes a long way. So, yeah.
So let's just go there for a second, if you don't mind, Kyle, because I think this is like a fundamental thing, right? So on the networking piece, because I've had throughout my career, as I've continued to grow and grow from a seniority perspective and everything else, and a visibility perspective, I often get asked about, oh, well, talk to me about your journey. How'd you get here? This or that. And like the network piece, I have been a bit surprised the number of people who don't think about this in a strategic way. So you talked about this right before I started talking around like providing value back, right? So for every, that is like, it's like the give first mentality, right? Any conversation that I go into, still to this day, I go in thinking, what value can I provide for that person? And it's not, there is a strategic component behind it that like, okay, I believe in karma, things come around, blah, 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 blah. You know, what goes around comes around. So if I'm providing value for you now, in the future, you'll likely provide value for me. Will that always happen? Of course not, but it will happen more often than not. And I was surprised by the number of people who don't have that philosophy, right? Like, and even talking about it, it's like, okay, so let's say that you are a salesperson and you're trying to get a sale. It's pretty clear that that person or that company isn't interested in buying your product. Is there a way you can maybe, okay, for whatever reason, let's say your price point is too high, let's say it's not the right time, whatever. Is there a way you can still provide value back to them? Because in the future, who knows, you might be a salesperson at company, two companies from now, and there'll be that connection. And a lot of people think very much like what's right in front of their face, as opposed to two or three steps down the line. And I always try to think two or three steps down the line. Like, you never know whether this person, and people who reach out to me just fresh out of college, I mean, it depends on them, right? But like, let's say someone like that, what can someone fresh out of college do for me? Well, nothing at that level, but it's like, I'm still going to, as much as I can, take those conversations and provide value for them. Cause that person fresh out of college could be the next whomever, Oprah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Right. So, I don't want to use always white men. So I'm trying to, you know, think differently. But yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I always try to think about the long-term play, and with the providing value too, like then the other thing I hear a lot about is like, okay, but if let's say I'm talking to the EVP of my company, executive vice president, or someone very senior, what value can I provide for them? And I'm like, here's the thing. I don't care how incredibly intelligent you are, how successful, how senior you are. There's probably something, this is how I've always thought about it. There's something that I know that you don't know that I can help you. Yep. And you can help me with a myriad of things, 5,000 things. But if I can help you with one thing and that one thing has value to you, then I have value to you. And yep. That's how I've always thought about it.
Exactly. You know, that's huge. And that's really what it's about, you know, understanding your value proposition. I truly believe everybody's value proposition or biggest asset is themselves, right? And your knowledge and what you can offer and what you can give, and not just trying to give to get, but truly give, because you said, you know, you don't know, it could be the next Oprah, it could be the next Tom Brady, it could be the next, you just never know. And so, having that mentality and to be honest, like people, I always think even if they are, no matter where they're at in life, like, you know, you could be homeless on the street and whatever, but I still, there's probably something that you could teach me, and I just need to be open to learning that.
Absolutely.
And the way I think of it is planting seeds, you know, you reap what you sow. And so if you can sow goodness, if you can sow love, if you can sow wisdom and knowledge, down the line it's going to come back. And, you know, all same vice versa. You know, if you sow, you know, bitterness and anger and jealousy or whatever, you know, that's going to come back too. So it's just, you know, you can't plant corn and end up with, you know, pumpkins, right? Is you're planting what you get, right? So
you chose a great one, because corn is my favorite, and it's only so same concept, different analogy, which you should appreciate because this is your sport, as is Troy's baseball, right? Like if you have a 300 batting average, if you hit 3 out of every 10 balls, you're considered extremely good. So it's like you kind of think about like the same thing. It's like I don't go into every conversation saying, well, this person can do so much for me. I truly want, I, for me, and maybe there is a selfish component for myself, it makes me feel good to do well for, like to do good for others.
Yeah.
I feel better about myself as a person. Like, okay, I did something for them. That makes me feel good. But that's the thing too. Like it's, I never would consider it effort wasted, because I still did something to impact someone else's life. And then I feel like it was worth my time. And that's, like, I always like to use a baseball analogy in anything, because I do a lot of innovation, whatever else. And it's like, oh, well, what if we fail? It's like, dude, you're going to fail so many times. If you're successful, I mean, venture capital, whatever, if you're 1 out of 20, 1 out of 10, and it's a big one, the rest of it is worth it. So
exactly. And I contribute baseball to a lot of my success, because it taught me failure. To be honest. And it's just, you know, you go 3 out of 10, you get a 3 out of 10 on the math test, and it's like, yeah, that's an F, right? Right. Yeah. And that's just how we're taught. But if you do 3 out of 10 in sales and, or whatever, I mean, that's pretty darn good. That's a 30%. Like that's, it depends on what you're selling and what you're getting back. But like, if you're selling something that's pretty darn expensive and you're doing 3 out of 10, hey, I'll take that all day. So
Exactly.
It's just, I love that analogy. I use it all the time. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
So kind of moving down the line, as you continue to kind of go through your positions and network.
So, we talked about the networking thing. So what I started doing while I was at, Infamous is I was realizing even during that time, the whole thing about network, I started building up my social presence. And I went in with kind of like a listen first mentality. So I was already reading all of the blogs and venture capitalists, which I'll refer to as VC moving forward, like their articles and their thoughts on things. And I was already like ingesting all that stuff. But then I was like, okay, well, how can I, back to what we just already talked about, how can I provide value back, or at least posit thoughts? So I started with like a very targeted group of 100 investors that I admired, venture capitalists or angel investors that I admired. And I followed them, and I was highly engaged in their content. I was responding to them and sometimes arguing with them, but with data to support my argument. And I started getting a lot of them to follow me back. And I remember one of the pivotal moments was when Jim Breyer, who was the big guy from Accel, and Accel as an ACCEL. He was the original, one of the original investors in Facebook. Like, he's a big deal. That's just the point, right? He followed me without me following him. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing something right here. So anyways, I built that up while I was working at Infamous. And I spent every single day when I was done with my startup, spent about 2 hours a night, 2 to 3 hours a night building up my social channel. I was focusing specifically on Twitter and building it and building it and building it. But what started happening naturally with that, which was really cool, because remember, I used to be shy. I didn't like I've never really had, maybe because of sports, I've never had a problem being the center of attention, have a bunch of people watching me. So I don't mind speaking in public in front of a group of people. What I don't like, or what I have not typically liked to do, is having one-on-one conversations. Like, that was more uncomfortable for me. For a variety of reasons. But anyway, so basically back to this whole concept, when I was doing this on social media, it was nice because it wasn't the same as like going to a conference and not knowing someone. And it's like, oh, hi, Kyle. Hi, who are you? What do you do? Like, with this, I already knew things about Kyle. I already know that Kyle likes baseball. I already know that he loves his baby girl and I. Like, I already know I have 3 things I can talk to you about. So when we engage, I feel less awkward about the conversation because I can already flow based off of what I know about you or what you're talking about on your channels. So I know I could talk to you about real estate and, oh, hey, Kyle, I got to tell you, man, the real estate market here is going crazy, right? Like, whatever else. So that's what I started doing. And so I would be meeting people for coffee, breakfast coffees, pretty much every morning. So I'd be building up my social channel at night, working on the startup full time. And then in the morning before going into work, I'd go and have these coffee lunches or coffee breakfast with people to build out my network. And that's what I did. So there was like the one-to-one and then the one-to-many. So the one-to-many was the big social stuff online. And then the one-to-one was the in-person stuff. So that's literally how I built my network. Nice. Growing and growing. And so by the time that, like, Infamous was doing really well, but here's the thing too about startups, like, they're roller coasters. You have highs and lows. And we had kind of come to a bit of an inflection point where we were more kind of flatlined. And so I felt like I'd been there for 3 years. We'd done a lot of amazing things. I had got promoted, which we didn't talk about many times during that journey.
Yeah.
Ended up becoming co-founder and getting co-founder equity, and was COO of the startup, which was chief operating officer of the startup, which was great. But we're talking small potatoes, right? We're like a 15-person company, but it was an incredible, incredible experience. But I did know that it was time for me to start looking next and what that looked like. So I was like obsessed with startup life. I was obsessed with tech life. And I was interviewing at Google. I was interviewing at another big tech company called Palantir and others like that. And then also at startups. And then one of the things that happened at BBVA was at Infamous was BBVA, which is one of the biggest banks in the world, really big in Latin America, Europe, and then it was a top 25 bank in the United States. So they had reached out to us at Infamous and said, we love your technology. You should apply for a startup competition. We did. We became a finalist, went down to Mexico. So that's how I met them. Back to the networking thing. One of the guys there I spent a lot of time with when we were like practicing, I was there talking to him for like 2.5 hours, just getting to know him. Another one as well. So one of these guys ended up being an angel investor. So fast forward 6-8 months, he wants to invest in a girlfriend of mine's company. So she's asking about him. He's asking about her. The three of us are getting dinner. And so at the time I was telling him the type of stuff that I was interviewing at. And at the end of it, he goes, you know, Scarlett, I have the perfect job for you. You should come work for us. And I was like, I don't know if I've been trying very hard not to curse while we're on here because I don't know who's watching. I do have a bad mouth. So I don't know the expletive that I use, but I definitely said, oh, basically, yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, I was like, oh no. And I just said, banks, you know, bad reputation. Think about the financial crisis of 2008. Like, I can't really see this. But I had really enjoyed my time getting to know BBVA, and BBVA was different. And he was like, listen, go look us up, spend some time. The chairman and CEO at the time was an old school IBM engineer. And he had talked about BBVA being a tech company before any of these big banks did. So I ended up joining as a SVP of Open Innovation, and they hired me for two. So they brought me in with zero banking experience, which was intimidating as hell, but also like awesome.
Yeah.
I respect them so much for that. And the two primary reasons were, one, that network that we've been talking about that I had built on social. So at that point, I already accumulated I don't know, 20, 30,000 followers. I forget, a lot though. And they wanted someone that had like the tech ecosystem component who could speak authentically to that group of people. So not to everyday individuals who wanted to open a banking account. That's not what I was doing. I was always on the tech side, interacting with the startups, interacting with the venture capitalists, interacting with the universities. And so those are the two things that they saw that they wanted me to come on board and do. And it was friggin' awesome. It was crazy, but it was really, really great.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like a whole new world, right? So like career change, like transition from where you were to the banking world, right?
Yeah. And not just the banking world. Like I would always make fun of my husband. He's in corporate and I hated the stuff he had to do in corporate. And I'm like, I'm never going to corporate. And then I joined a global bank of 140,000 people.
Pretty corporate.
Yeah.
That's funny. Exactly. So transitioning, you know, to there, what was that journey like going through, you know, BBVA?
So it was interesting because I had, because of the network stuff, I had 5-10 people that I had known in banking. So I reached out to them and I just said, hi, help. What should I be following? What should I be doing? And they each gave me their respective things. And I just deeply immersed myself in that. I think one thing that I started learning through this is that when I put my mind to something, maybe it's because of the competitive nature, I'm not sure, but I go all in and I can learn quickly. And so that's what I did. And I remember one of these gentlemen, pretty well known in the space, saw me 8-9 weeks later at a conference in New York. And he was introducing me to some people and here's Scarlett from BBVA. And what do you guys do? And I just started riffing and his mouth like opened. And afterwards he was like, oh my God, Scarlett. He's like, I cannot believe how part of the industry you sound basically. He's like, if I didn't know, I would have sworn that you've been in this industry for 5 or 10 years. Like, I cannot believe that you were just, this is the same woman who asked me a few weeks ago, who do I follow? What do I do? So it was a steep, steep learning curve, but oh my God, I loved it. It was so fun. BBVA had the best culture, just so forward thinking. So, you know, it was corporate. So there were challenges, of course, but I was working on really cool stuff. I mean, I ended up taking over the competition, the startup competition that I was a finalist in. I took over the North American portion. So built that out. I had colleagues all over the world in Latin America and in Europe, and was just doing really fun things together. So looking at startups to invest in, to acquire. We're also building startups ourselves to go to market to compete, which was interesting. And then the other big thing was we were, this is like, you're going to get too down the road, but I'll try to keep it high enough level. So one of the things that's happening in the space is like so banks have a lot of stuff on the back end so pretty much like if we were taking the plumbing and the piping of the banks and exposing them to fintech, i.e. financial technology startups and others to build on top of. So I was still very engaged in the ecosystem in all those ways, which was it was a lot of fun. And then also spent a lot of time. This wasn't part of my job, but it naturally became part of my job. So here's the thing that I started realizing was like, okay, there's a lot of disconnect here between what's happening in Spain, which is the motherland, and where strategy is coming from. And then the execution that was essentially not being told to them, but it's like all of a sudden these line of business leaders within the United States were being asked to do all these things. So I took it upon myself to go down and spend time at our headquarters in the US, down in Houston and in Birmingham on a regular basis, and really understand and talk to the executives there, understand their pain points, understand where the opportunities were, and start connecting the dots. So that's the other big thing that I would say has stuck with me for my entire career since then, is being that bridge builder and connecting those dots. Because we talked about this a little bit earlier, Kyle, but like so much of this goes back to people. Like it doesn't matter who you are, you're a person, and you have an ego and you have, you know, a personality, and there are things that are going to trigger you, and then there's things that are going to excite you. And so figuring out what those things are that make someone's tick, the rest of the business becomes pretty easy after that. It's not, I shouldn't say easy, but it becomes easier after you understand the mentality of any of those individuals. So I spent a lot of time doing that as well, which I really enjoyed.
That's awesome. Yeah. And especially doing it in a different culture, right?
Yes. And it's like, and that's a thing too, because there's cultures within cultures, because you have the Spanish culture, then you have the US culture, but we're talking about the South. So it's like, it's different than even though I'm from Colorado, you know, I'm considered a New Yorker. And so it's like trying to permeate that mentality as well, which that also happened later on in the career. Also, it's like, okay, so people have a perception of you because you dress a certain way, you look a certain way, you talk a certain way. I talk very quickly. Like, you know, it's just being aware of the environment that you're in. So, I mean, I make it a point when I'm talking to colleagues who do not, they speak English, but it's their second language. I try to speak more slowly because I don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. And I'm like, listen, good job for you. You speak all these languages. So I don't want to make you feel awkward that you're not understanding what I'm saying. I try to slow down. Or even if I'm in the South, I just change a little bit how I dress. I change my demeanor a little bit. Like, you want to feel like you're all on the same team, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so good. That's a good little nugget right there. That's good. Yeah. Cool. So kind of keep going down the line. What was next?
Okay. So next, so this was the other accomplishment that you listed in the beginning. So the next step was I joined as a chief innovation officer. So I was at the C-suite level, reporting directly to the CEO of a public bank out on the West Coast. And the CEO, life is just funny. So the CEO had reached out to me. He emailed me to my work account, actually, I believe. Maybe he got that from LinkedIn. I don't know. Anyways, he literally Googled the word fintech and saw me from that. And so he had watched a bunch of my videos because I do a lot of public speaking. Mm. And he reached out to me and said, I like the way that your brain thinks. Let's have a conversation. I'm like, is this for real? Because here's the thing about the best thing. We've talked all the positive things about social media. We haven't talked about all the crazy people who are on there. So you know, there's the requested things that have come to me are just insane. So I'm like, this is a very weird thing. I'm not sure about this, but I looked them up. He seemed legit. I'm like, I believe in, you know, whatever, serendipity, fate, whatever you want to call it. So I was like, let's just have a conversation. We kicked it off like very, very well. We talked for 10, 12 hours, not one sitting by any means, but over a period of time. And he was a super successful guy, and investment banker in New York for years. The first time he retired, he was in his 30s. He's retired at this point. He was in his 50s. He had already retired 3 times, sold a company for $1 billion. Like, just
he just got bored or what is that?
Exactly. Those type of personalities are kind of like that. I feel like I would never fully get out, but like, I definitely wouldn't go work full time again. I mean, I would do.
Yeah, definitely.
Those personalities sometimes have a hard time with that. So he was great. We really got along well, and he's like, I want to find a way for us, you know, to work together. What could that look like? And so we ended up coming up with this role as, you know, CIO, head of strategic transformation and digital, which was a mouthful title, of this public bank out on the West Coast. So I did that. I was always based in New York, and I would just fly back and forth in between. We also had a subsidiary that we had recently acquired, which was an alternative IRA custodian. That was actually, the operations out in Colorado and Denver, and the executive team was in San Francisco. So there was a lot that needed to be worked out there too, just in terms of alignment, people alignment.
Yeah. So
I spent a lot of time out there. Totally opposite role that I had at BBVA. So this company had 1,000 people, and I was getting much more at the granular level. So I was kind of like getting in the weeds and thinking about things with, you know, banking and digital banking, and getting to the level of like, okay, so what color we want this button to be and things like that. She was like the polar opposite. BBVA, always high level strategy, making connections. Here it's like coming down and doing things at a much deeper level. Super interesting experience. I realize I don't like that stuff. I like the level above. So that was a really interesting journey. I learned a lot. You know, even the same thing, like, it's a West Coast organization. I'm considered the East Coaster, so that balance was something. And yeah, I've now been in the last 2 years, managing director and just chief innovation officer of a consulting firm, where I've been able to go. And what I realized is, like, I love this idea of solving these complex problems. And part of it is, some of the problems are the internal problems of connecting different parts of the business and getting them excited and supportive of these initiatives about moving forward.
Yeah.
And so I have clients all over the world that are banks and fintechs, who reach out. They see me typically through my speaking, because I do a lot of speaking and writing. I write for Forbes. I write for a bunch of other publications that are specific to our industry. And then I speak all over the world on this stuff. And so that typically, because I don't consider myself a salesperson, nor do I really enjoy selling, but I enjoy talking about the things that I love, which has actually resulted in business, which has been great. I do a lot of the digital strategy and help banks all over the world think about these things. So I've had banks, clients in the Middle East, Europe, all over the US, credit unions, banks, and typically between like 2 and 20 billion in assets. So small enough where we're dealing directly with the C-suite and board level.
Sweet. Yeah. And that's quite the experience as well. So, and I think you touched on something, which is kind of, you know, you stepped into, you know, a big role, but it wasn't what you were passionate about. It didn't seem like the right fit. And then the last couple of years you've been, and I like what you said, because I mean, sales is, could be sales, but the best salespeople that I run into are people who are educational. And that sounds exactly what you're doing. You know, you're educating people on your space. You're educating people, you know, in high positions, you know, whether it's through the newsletter or different podcasts or whatever you're doing, you know, that's, probably led to more business if you were just trying to sell people, because you're just educating them.
You're absolutely right. So one thing that's crucial to me, because especially now that I have the scale and like the followership, because we haven't talked directly about Tech Tuesday, but that's something that I kind of came up with, but we can get to that later maybe. But anyways, the idea there has always been, when anyone reaches out to me about wanting to me to feature them on this or that, it's like, we talked about network. The other side of this is your reputation, which leads into network, right? The thing that I would say in a way keeps me up at night, well, there's a million things that keep me up at night, but one of the things that always is on my mind is, it takes years, decades. It will never stop. Like, building your reputation is an ongoing process, and it's so hard to do and continue to grow. But one or two false moves and that whole thing can be a house of cards, right? Like, I'm being a bit dramatic, because obviously people who know you well will continue, but you just have to be really careful about that. So I definitely, in anything that I'm doing, like you said, the educational, for me, the way that I think about it, it comes from an authentic, real voice. Like,
yeah.
I've experienced doing this, and here's what I've found, and here's the stuff that's really challenging, and here's the things that are really exciting. And so when it's something that you are truly passionate about, that you actually know what you're talking about, that authenticity and that passion, like, is palpable. People can feel it and they get excited about it and they want to be around it. So that's kind of like another way for the sales thing. But to the other comment that you made about, you know, the role and all of that and not liking what I was doing, I mean, that was one of those things, right? So kind of taking a step back and thinking, I've been through a lot in my life, including, you know, death of parents and death of my mother, because I still have my father. But there's many things that happen in life. And one of the things that I started really thinking about after that moment was like, okay, here I am, this like ambitious go-getter. Remember, my 14-year-old self wanted to be CEO of a major corporation in New York City. There's a constant reminder since then that life is short. So that best title, which it makes me feel really good, and that money, which is great, all these things are important. But if you're not passionate and excited about what you're doing, that stuff doesn't matter. Like, it helps. It definitely helps. Having financial security definitely helps, especially when you have a family. But if you find a type of a role, it doesn't mean you're not going to work hard. I work hard every single day of my life. Like, it's a battle, but I love it because I enjoy what I'm doing. And that's just a different dynamic. So,
You nailed it on the head. That's exactly right. And I think so many people, for whatever reason, they get stuck into a career or a job and they're just not happy. And to be honest, that sucks. And I don't think so. I mean, there's a ton of fear involved because they're stepping into something new, or, you know, to do what they're passionate about. How could they ever get paid for that? I mean, and there's ways to do it. And it's just about being creative and innovative and connecting with the right people and being a go-getter, just like all of what you said. But I mean, I think more than any time, at least in my life, people, I've seen more people like throughout this last year with COVID just realize like life is short, you know? And you mentioned, you know, losing your mom and realizing like, you know, it doesn't matter in the end, you know, what really matters is your family and your happiness and the true things, the true joys in life. You know, it's great to have money and letters next to your name and all that stuff is nice and can help life. But as in the end, I don't really truly think it's going to make you happy. You know, it can help. But I don't think it's like you do this. I mean, I think there's so many, I hear of so many stories of professional athletes. They win the, you know, the gold medal, they win the Super Bowl, whatever, you know, win the World Series, whatever, you know, and then they're like, shoot, like that was great. But then there's still that
void.
Yeah, exactly. And that's
exactly right. And so there's a healthy balance, right? So when you think about health, there's physical health, there's financial health, there's mental health, there's a lot of things. So you want to make sure that your basic health is well taken care of, which makes total sense. To the point that you mentioned about, well, people wanting to go, well, how do you find what you love to get passionate about? So here's the thing, right? Was I passionate about being an office admin? No, but like it was about the whole experience around it, right? And the fact that you start here and the people that I was around were interesting. So anything else, even if I wasn't allowed in those meetings, I'm sitting in the same, this is obviously years ago before COVID, but like the same cubicle of sorts where I can just listening and observing and digesting information and growing and learning that way. So it's not like there, you don't have to think about it, or I try not to think about it because I've had this exact conversation with people that I know well. Like, it doesn't have to be those extremes. It's not like, oh, well, I have to be passionate and love my job every day. Of course not. Like, I definitely don't love it every day. There are some days that I want to slam my head against the wall. But it's like, overall, like the way that I judge it too is, some days, especially back before COVID, I'd be traveling and I'd be anywhere in the world and it'd be a 12, 13 hour day. That's a long friggin' day. And I was physically tired, but mentally I was like amped because I had back-to-back meetings and they were with interesting people from all over the world talking about really cool stuff. Sure, were there some terrible, boring meetings? Of course there were, but there were plenty that kept me energized and excited. So it was like, here we go again. So that's why it's like, you know, it's not, I'm not sitting here like lying on a beach living my best life ever. Like, I'm working hard, but I enjoy components of it. And it's a type of stuff. Like, you, if you think about personality, do you like being around people? Do you like talking all the time? Do you like sitting at your desk and just doing work? Like, all those things help you to have a fulfilled life and a fulfilled job, right? And it doesn't mean it's going to be a dream job, but it's at least, you know?
Yeah. And I think we touched on it greatly, you touched on it in a great way, is that you turned every, you know, situation into an opportunity. And even if you didn't get to go to those meetings, you still got to sit and listen to those people, or you got to connect with those people, and you keep mentioning it, but that is what it's all about. It's about people. It's about connecting with them and caring about them and adding value to them.
And that's what I think too, like, I've had the opportunity to meet some of the most successful people, at least in my industry, billionaires. Okay. Like hundreds and hundreds of millionaires, billionaires, and success is not only about money, right? We keep saying that there's a lot of different ways to define success, but the traditional sense, like money equals power, blah, 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 whatever. Anyways, one of the things, and certainly some of them are like geniuses. I sit there in the room, I'm like, I can't even comprehend half of what's going on right now. But one of the things that surprised me the most, like getting to that executive level, is the lack of EQ. Like, people are very smart or experts at specific areas or things that have enabled them to be at this senior level because they've been doing it for 20 years and they're the only one who knows how to da 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 da. Not the only one, but you know what I mean. But the people component and the lack of the people component has been really surprising to me. Like, how am I the first person to come in and be like, what's going on here? Why? Oh, these people suck, or these people are awful. I hate this person. And it's like, okay. And by the way, some of these people are saying those things about me. They hate me for a million different reasons. And how is this 20-year-old who has no this or that? How is she at this level? This is BS. Why is she getting time or whatever else? I mean, it's been really hard because I go into many conversations knowing that people don't think that I have a right to sit at the same table as them. But, and there are days where that definitely impacts me. I'm a human being. I can't sit here. Sure. Oh, it doesn't matter. Like, it does. It impacts me. It makes me sad. It's hard. It's like, oh my God. But then on my, you know, I think you called you go girl days. So let's just say that on my you go girl days, it's like, dude, let those people who are the biggest naysayers about you become your biggest advocates. And I have not been successful every time. Don't get me wrong. But I think that I've at least been able to make them not my biggest adversaries. At least they're indifferent about me versus like trying to crush me.
Yeah. And I think that I used to, you know, for me personally, like, I'm very much a people pleaser. I like to help people, and people don't like me, I'm like, why don't you like me, kind of a thing. But I've also learned, like, hey, people just aren't going to like you, and that's okay. And I'm going to love you, and I'm going to just, you know, shower you with all the love that you are going to just, and I don't do it to make them more angry at me, but I do it because I feel like that's what I feel like that's how I'm called to be. But at the same time, like, if people aren't like, I don't know the right word, like, if they're not hating on you, if you don't have haters, then you're not doing something right. Right. I think that you should have some haters in life, or, you know, when you go into those meetings and you're the youngest person at the table, like, that's awesome. And they need your insight, and that you have value to offer them, and just the generation differences. And that's huge. And I think that the right people have you at the table for a reason. And so,
you know, and I agree with that. And it is hard though. And that's like one thing that I really try to remember is how I feel and how I felt, so that, because like time continues, I will not always be the youngest person in the room. That's whatever. Right. So like when the tables turn and there is someone else who's in that position, being like reminiscent of the fact that that was you. So going above and beyond to try to make that person feel comfortable, even if in my own head, who knows, I may be like, oh my God, what is this person doing here? They have no experience. But it's like, okay, Scarlett, take a step back. You were there. They're here for a reason. You trust in your boss, you trust in the board, you trust in whomever that put them in this position. So let's see what you can do to help make them successful. And that's what I truly hope and believe that I will try to do. And I will hold myself accountable as much as I can. Cause that's like, you know, it's hard. And that's the other thing too, is like women, minority men, like whatever, there's an imbalance there. And so it's not like, you don't have to always be so, I mean, you can be, and there are plenty of people who are very public about these things. I am too, to agree, but I try to be the more strategic back end player where it's like, what can I do to elevate the voice of women? What can I do to elevate the voice of minority men? And not sit here and make a big thing about it, because like, we need everyone to be part of this process. We want them involved in this conversation. And at times, depending on how you present it, they may not think that they actually have, it's like, oh, you're going to scold them. So the way that I do is like, okay, I'm speaking. Hey, you have any other great speakers? Yep. Three minority men or three women, like whatever I can do. Like, I make a conscious effort in any time that someone asks me for something that I provide a unique perspective. And that's even like the idea behind Tech Tuesday was, okay, so here it is. I have this platform being social, being Twitter, being LinkedIn, being whatever. I'm already ingesting all this content. I know I've been fortunate in my career, and I've been able to travel all over the world. I know some really freaking cool people and you're similar, like you've been everywhere. So it's like, how can I use my platform as a voice to help elevate theirs? And that was the idea behind Tech Tuesday, because I thought a lot about it and I was like, okay, well, should I call it Females in FinTech Friday? Like, I wanted some type of a, you know, marketing thing. And it was like, so obviously FinTech is kind of my lane. I want it to be about women. I'm like, No, because A, I believe in serendipity and like just things happening and like spontaneity too. So I sometimes have like ag tech on there. So yes, it tends to be more on the fintech, but not always. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you put the woman thing in front of it, this is my belief, and I've gotten criticism for this by some people, but like if you put the woman in front of it, not just that you shouldn't do that, but I chose not to because the fact that they're on the, on Tech Tuesday, or the fact that I'm highlighting them, actually has nothing to do with the fact that they're a woman or a minority man. It has to do with being amazing individuals who are doing really cool things. And so I felt like by putting labels around it, it changed the conversation. Whereas this is just an individual doing cool stuff. So I get pitched like a lot by people all over, white men are like, oh, or hey, can you get our CEO on there? I just say, like, I'll either respond, oh yeah, maybe in the future, whatever else. I'm not like, no, I'm not saying, I'm saying no to all white men, but I will say I prioritize women and minority men. What you guys are doing is really interesting, but how about your, you know, your chief strategy officer instead of your CEO, you know, something like that. So,
yeah, no, that's cool. And I think that's a great kind of twist and perspective just to be more appealing to everybody. And I think it's part of the reason why you've had the success that you've had is because you take a different outlook on things. So let's dive into to fintech real quick. Tell me, explain to our viewers just what is that? So many people are just like, right? So just educate us.
Well, it was interesting because the other of your shows that you had Craig on, and you're talking about Bitcoin and all that, and he was talking about fintech, so it was kind of cool. The simplest way is, I mean, so fintech is quite literally financial technology, but what fintech means is in practice. So most of you now know with your phones how to like pay people. So whether you use Zelle or Venmo or PayPal, like literally all of those are fintechs. That's just examples of fintechs. You know, there's a lot, obviously, you know, better than most, Kyle, with like crypto and what's going on there. Like a lot of the Siebers, my family, they have Robinhood accounts and they're doing stuff on there. So like Robinhood, a fintech. So fintech just really encompasses anything that, if you just think about money and the movement of money, the technology behind that and any apps that you use around that, that's like a fintech company. So, you know, there's a lot that have been coming out even. So there's this whole group around neobanks, which are banks, digital banks for specific groups. So like Chime is probably the biggest example. They had advertisements at the Super Bowl, so you may have seen it. So they are a digital bank focused. They were originally focused on millennials. They've kind of expanded it. So really it's just taking banking, making it sexy, for lack of a better word, do really nice marketing. And with them, one of the things they did is, which banks have the ability to do, but they allowed you to get your paycheck 2 days earlier. So yeah, fintech, just everything technology with a movement of money is like the simplest way to think about it.
Cool. I like it. And so, I mean, it's the future. It's how things are happening. More and more, even in
a ton of money into it too, by the way, like it's a big space.
And
fintech was one of the spaces. It's been going like crazy for a while, but I didn't mean to interrupt you, by the way, Kyle, but one of the reasons why, like after COVID, there's like more money into fintech, which is just chaos, but yeah.
Okay. So tell me a little bit, like how is fintech going to change the world?
Okay.
Or how is it already?
There's a million ways. Okay. So first of all, the fact that you can now pay people in any way that you want to is a big deal. So, okay, let's put the altruistic hat on because obviously I care about this. So one of the big lanes within fintech is financial inclusion. So you know this, I'm sure, from your time over in Africa, but like other countries, other continents, obviously Africa being a continent, there's plenty of countries in Latin America where there's like this idea around communal money. So like you and I and Megan and Troy will all put money into a pot, as well as your parents or whatever else. And then when you and Megan want a new TV, you guys can collectively take that money to buy the new TV, and you're paying us back over time and interest. So anyways, the idea about fintech and changing the world, I think from a financial inclusion perspective, is twofold. I think that it will enable and empower people to make money in ways that they couldn't before.
Yep.
And there's huge portions of the population globally that are unbanked or underbanked because of lack of lack of data. So like in the United States, we have credit scores, which by the way are a disaster, but we have them and that's how we define whether or not someone is credit worthy, right? So mm-hmm. that exists in many other places. So like in Mexico, as an example, there are a lot of people who don't have bank accounts, even though they keep their money in under their bed. The way that you need to make money by putting it to work, you know this. So anyways, through FinTech, people are using data like you're paying your utility bill every month, you're paying your phone bill every month. How can we use these other things that you're already doing? People are using social constructs as well to say, okay, you're now credit worthy. So I think it helps empower people in that way. There's some examples of in other countries, other third world countries like Indonesia. So pretty much everyone still has phones, right? So there's a lot that they do with buying and selling of tickets. They can now do that digitally on their phone. So there's like this whole thing where, back to the women thing, because obviously I care about that. In this specific area within Indonesia, women were kind of considered less than, and a lot of it has to do with the financial control, right? Like that's what I'm saying. Like there's health and financial health and money has a lot of influence there. So by allowing them to actually make money by selling tickets digitally through their phone, they now can make $5 a day or whatever that number is, which is a significant amount where they're at. So they have more power, more influence, and more respect. So there's so many things that it can do.
Yeah, it's game changing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And so kind of mention some of the places. So you have your Tech Tuesday, but what are some of the other platforms or areas that you've got to go and like speak in the, you know, public speak on this specific topic?
So, okay. So two-sided question. Okay. So yeah. So Tech Tuesday is on LinkedIn. I have Twitter. I do that. I do LinkedIn Live on there too. I write, like I said, for Forbes and others. So where have I spoken? Kind of the coolest places, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, Sydney multiple times, which was amazing. I brought my brother once, which was really fun. He got to watch me speak, and he's like the biggest critic of me. But afterwards, he was like, "Well, you did really well, Scarlett, but the person before you, their PowerPoint had a lot more like, you know, emotions and things like that, and like you should definitely incorporate that." And Scarlett, at one point when you were asking this question, he also saw me speak in Vegas at a huge conference. That's where he lives, and he was just like, "You were looking down at your paper a little bit too much." Like the other guy, he didn't do that. I'm like, okay. So, anyways,
that's awesome.
I'd say Sydney, Dubai, Bogota. I mean, all over the US, all over Europe, but those are probably the three that's Kuwait City. Mm. Those are the ones that probably stick out. I have not spoken in Africa yet. Okay. I've gotten to, but the timing just didn't work out. But I'll be there for sure.
Oh yeah, you will. You will. Cool. So I want to dive into some of these quick questions as we kind of wrap up some of the fun ones. What's the biggest challenge you have with your specific role right now, and how are you kind of overcoming it?
Biggest challenge with my role right now. This is going to be a very easy answer because we've talked about this for the last hour. People. Like so much what we do is like for me and my clients, it's going to them in person, sitting in front of a whiteboard and mapping some of this stuff out and having the dialogue together. You can see a lot. Like I can see your reactions, Kyle. I see how you're reacting when I'm doing something, you laugh, whatever else. It's not the same as when you're in person. There's body language. You can't see what my legs are doing right now. First of all, you can already notice I'm animated because I'm talking to you. So I'm moving a lot, but like, you know, there's a lot that's not happening now virtually that makes it hard to do the same level of work that I was doing before, because a lot of it is like, okay, so here's the issue that you have. Let me go have this interview with you. Let me go have this interview with you. We're all in the same room together. Your body language speaks volumes and you can't fully get that virtually. Plus, like, it's like breaking bread. Going and eating afterwards together is where a lot of deals and things happen, and we don't have the ability to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. I mean, it's all about connecting with the person. And to be honest, I mean, communication is so much beyond just like this. Like you said, it's like, you know, people are using their hands and, you know, even if it's on the phone, like you can't, or texting is like the worst part of communication. You can't tell tone, you can't tell anything. So, I mean, this is a little bit better, but definitely in person, it's way better. So, yeah, that's.
I feel like you can tell the tone with me when you text me and I use a lot of exclamations. I'm yelling.
I can tell the tone with my wife too in a text. So.
Good.
What's the biggest surprise you've had in the last few months?
Biggest surprise I've had in the last few months. I guess my dad coming. I mean, I have a young son. He's 10 months old. There's so many surprises because I've never been a parent before. So every day is a new surprise with the little one. He's the most humbling thing I've ever had. I think I got him figured out, and then he's like, ha ha, not yet, mommy. But yeah, having my dad come and spend time with him was awesome. And that was a nice surprise.
Yeah. Special. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's cool. It's cool. If you had an extra $10 million, what would you do with it?
So that's the thing. This is going to sound like a jerk answer, and it's not meant to be. For sure. I mean, I want to invest in women and minority men companies. The unfortunate part about it is $10 million is not enough to really move the needle. I would definitely start there.
All right. Let's just say $500 million.
Okay, good. So that's what I do. I'd open up a fund and I'd invest in women and minority men companies, but not only them. I would definitely have a few white guy companies in there that are game changers. I wouldn't make it about being a woman and minority. All the things I've already told you, but I'd invest and focus on that. And I'd still speak because I love speaking. So I'd still do what I'm doing now, but like less work, more travel.
Cool. That sounds like you'll be there soon. I like it.
Like not the $500 million, man. That's a ways away, but we'll see.
No, not yet. Or not. I think you're closer than you think. So, how do you continue to learn in order to stay on top of things within your industry? Because your industry is very much changing. It's tech, right? I mean, you can wake up tomorrow and things are different. So, how are you staying on top of stuff?
So I am a big, big believer in constantly learning. No matter how much of an expert you think you are in anything, you're not. And you need to be better in things, like you said, I mean, in tech in general, but pretty much everything is still evolving and growing. It's hard, to be honest with you, because it takes a lot of friggin' time. But I follow all the channels. I try to listen to the podcast when I can. I scroll my LinkedIn and see the updates there. I read the newsletters. Like, I need to be more. When I saw this question, I was like, it reminded me, I need to be more diligent about carving out time on my calendar to do just that, because I pass by it, but I want to be closer to it. And the other part is having those conversations. I mean, I definitely do that part, having conversations with the movers and shakers and the next version of them is what I do.
Yeah. I think that's huge. You said that. I think you said that really well. So with having that conversation with the people who are up and coming and then the people are doing it right now. So that's mm-hmm. What's been the biggest failure over the last, couple of years? And how have you kind of overcome that?
I make mistakes all the time. I would say biggest failure over the last couple of years is sometimes I get too excited without doing the proper amount of due diligence on things. So I really make it a point because when I am in for something, I'm in. I think we talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
I have tried to make more of a conscious effort to take a step back, let the excitement, let the endorphins kind of chill, and then think through all of the potential implications of what could happen and ask the tough questions to get a better answer, because I can tend to jump without seeing how deep the water is. And so, yeah, I would say that. I'd say that's the biggest thing. And the other part is continuing to be as active as the ecosystem as I want to be, because it's hard, right? Like this whole thing about networking that we've been talking about ad nauseum, the way to do it really well is you have to keep that up. You can't like build it and leave it. You have to continue to engage and to engage. It's a full-time job and I'm only one human being. So I fail at that all the time. Like I wish I could do more on that side. I don't do as much as I need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. It's good to know kind of where you've maybe fallen short and how you're overcoming it. And that's good too. That's wisdom for me. I feel like I'm similar. Like I get excited about something and I'm all in and I just dive and I go for it versus like really, doing my due diligence and understanding that space a little bit or a lot bit better before I just jump into it. So, I think there's benefits to that. And also, it's part of learning. So, that's good. Cool. So what's a question that you feel like I didn't answer or didn't ask you that you feel like is beneficial for folks as we kind of wrap up?
I don't know, man. I feel like we talked about basically everything. There's really nothing except for one cool thing. This is not, you know, I played, you don't know this probably. I don't know if Megan told you this. I played on the boys basketball team when I was in middle school.
Hey,
That was an experience. So, you know, I just think the theme here is there's really nothing you didn't ask. I think the kind of two key takeaways, which it's such like a cute saying, oh, get comfortable being uncomfortable, but it's really, really friggin' hard to do in practice. But I can guarantee anyone who is watching this, like, push yourself, girl or guy. Like, it's the most rewarding thing. And even if it doesn't work out and you don't get what you wanted, it's still a growth experience for you. And you put yourself in a zone you didn't think was possible. Like, I genuinely believe that so much of success is based off of people who are just willing to take a little bit more risk. And I'm not talking about the financial stuff. I'm talking about putting yourself in your comfort zone, right? Just asking the hard thing. And that's not only professionally, that could be personally as well.
Yep. You know,
asking that person out on a date or whatever it is and being afraid that they're going to reject you. Okay, if you go in thinking the worst thing that's going to happen is reject me, that's going to friggin' suck. But at least you'll know you're not playing this like middle crazy game. I don't know.
That's good.
Getting there. That's what I would think is the most important thing. And give first. Those are the two key takeaways in my brain is from what we've been talking about over the last hour or so.
Yeah, no, it's great. And we're so happy to have you. And there's a ton of golden nuggets throughout here. Just kind of sharing your story and life and the ups and downs and just, you know, connecting with people and kind of working your way up through the system and going from small town Durango to, you know, the Big Apple and really, you know, and I think you really touched on a valuable point with just your network and how you did that. And it's like, all right, I found 100 angel investors that I was super interested in, and you started following them and engaging with them in the way that you could, you know, which back in the day, you know, social media and those things, like, usually if you have someone running your social media, it's usually you're one person or two people away from getting to that person. Right. Yeah. And so it's very game changing. And so understanding that and being able to just engage with those people and in those industries. And I'm super excited for what you're going to do and continue to do in your life. And I think it's going to be fun to watch your story unfold. So
thank you, Kyle. And I think the one last thing that you just made me think of there with that, with the whole social and connecting and whatever else and two people away, is like, whomever your target audience is, whether it's for your own business or you want a job or whatever, like, if you know who those people are, let's say there's 10 people, see which platform is right for them. Do some Googling, spend some time. Most likely you'll be able to find a fair amount out about them and then connect with them the things that you know they connect about. If it's a business thing, don't go to business. Maybe it's about baseball with Kyle or real estate or whatever, you know, maybe it's about scuba diving with me. Like, you don't know, but if you're creative and think about it differently, no, not a lot of people are doing that. So you just got to, you know, flip the switch.
Yeah.
The switch, the script.
No, yeah. That's good. Cool. Awesome. Well, Scarlett, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And you rock. So thanks for all the wisdom and nuggets in there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.